Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hoffman Show on 106.7 The Fan. We're doing a lot of college hoops coming up in just a little bit. This Wofford-Kentucky game is bonkers. Cats up two. We'll have the ball, presumably get fouled. There's a little over 30 seconds to go. We're talking football now, though, as we spent the first hour of the show on that. And we'll continue it, shifting gears slightly to the NFL draft with Danny Kelly of The Ringer. You can find his work there. You can find him on Twitter at Danny B. Kelly. Danny, what's up, man? Good to talk to you.
Much. How are you, man?
I am good. So I'm going to start with a question that I get all the time, or a version of a question that I get all the time. People ask me about the Redskins sitting at 15 for this draft. And you're a guy who watches a lot of tape. You know, you've studied this. The draft is your thing. You're the Ringer's guy when it comes to the draft, in case people don't know. Who is the best player you think they could reasonably get at 15? So we're not talking like, who's the best player they could get? Well, Kyler Murray could somehow fall. Like, that's not what we're talking about here. Someone that you've seen in some mock drafts that might actually be available at 15, probably not, but like would be the absolute best case scenario.
Well, you know, I don't know how strongly the Skins need like an outside edge rusher. It's probably something that every team needs. The two guys that kind of come to my mind that I have rated really highly are Brian Burns and Clelin Ferrell. I just think those guys are top 10 talents. I've seen a lot of mock drafts that have them going sometime in the teens and the mid-teens, even sometimes like the early 20s. And so just off the top of my head, those are two guys that I think could definitely fall that far, you know, just based on runs at other positions, you know, depending on how the quarterback situation goes, if there's three quarterbacks in the top 10 or whatever, these are the type of guys that could fall. The other two that come to mind are Devin White and Devin Bush. Right now, they're kind of 1A and 1B at the linebacker position for me. And both, I think, immediate impact players that could come in and play from day one. And I think, you know, there's sort of the thought these two guys are both top 10 talents at this point. Devin White's been in a lot of mock drafts in the top 10. I know that Bush is kind of making his way up into that area. So those are a couple other guys I think that could potentially still be there at 15 that would be really intriguing for the Redskins.
Yeah, no, they definitely do need an edge guy, specifically a pass rushing type. They've got Ryan Anderson, but he has not shown as a pass rusher yet. Right now, he's slated to start opposite of Ryan Kerrigan. So let's go into those two edge guys first. What to you are the differences between Ferrell and Burns, and who ultimately do you like more as of right now?
Well, yeah, actually, it's an interesting comparison because Ferrell from Clemson, he's kind of just game ready, really long, really good first step, you know, just a fundamental player, very good against the run, very disruptive, had a ton of production at Clemson. He's kind of like the high floor guy, and then he might have a little bit lower ceiling than some players just because he doesn't bend the edge quite as well as some of these other guys. He's not quite as explosive at the top of his rush. And then conversely, Brian Burns, he played in the 220, 230 range at Florida State, so there's some question of whether he can keep the weight on. He came into the combine at 249. I think if he can play around that area in terms of weight, he has incredible upside. I mean, he has like one of the highest upsides of any pass rusher in this class just because he is incredibly explosive. He's one of the best athletes in this class at that position. Very bendy. I mean, he's got like Gumby-style bend around the corner. That to me is what gives him, you know, there were some people talking on Twitter. He almost looked a little bit like Von Miller in his workouts at the combine. He moves around like he's a safety almost. He's incredibly athletic. And so he's also only, I think, 20 years old. So he's got incredible upside. He's the lower floor just because you have to worry about the weight situation, whether he can kind of play at that level at the 250-pound range. But to me, he's got an incredible ceiling. I really like him as a player. And so, They're definitely like contrasting prospects because one's high floor, one's really, really high ceiling. So I like them both. And I think, you know, if they're around there, the Redskins could definitely consider either of them.
I think they could consider either of the Devins as well. Danny Kelly's our guest from The Ringer. I'm Craig Hoffman here on 106.7 The Fan. Danny on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Middle linebacker is not a desperate need for them. Sean Deon Hamilton right. showed some things, and they think he's got a high upside, and had he not been injured at Alabama, he would have been a lot higher than a fifth-round pick. But these two dudes might be like game-changing type of defensive talents, and obviously they are going to pair that those guys with Reuben Foster in the middle of their 3-4. So is there one of those guys that to you really says, like, Mike linebacker 3-4 fits the bill? Obviously, White is seen as the better prospect, but, like, what's the gap between those two?
It is extremely close to me. I think in my next update, I'm going to have them at 14 and 15, so that tells you a lot. I mean, they're very close in terms of their skill sets. I would say I'd lean a little bit towards Devin White, LSU, as a more prototypical 3-4 type inside linebacker. Bush, I think, maybe fits the bill as a weak side linebacker and a 4-3 a little bit better because he's a little more, I think, you know, fast flow, keep him clean, that kind of thing. He's just like a speeding bull. He's a heat-seeking missile, I should say. He's just very, very fast, you know, field sideline to sideline type speed. White is a little bit more, I think, you know, compact, bigger, you know, slightly bigger. He's not much bigger, but he's slightly bigger. Played in the middle at LSU a bunch. He plays very, very aggressive style of ball. He delivers big hits. He's good at blitzing. He's basically, I think, the prototype for what a middle linebacker is going to be in the NFL going forward. You know, good in coverage, very good blitzer, can stop the run, you know, all these things. He's going to be a star, I think. But there's a little bit of question about his aggressiveness. It's almost a little bit too aggressive at times. He flies downhill and he can kind of get out of position. But I think to me, he's more prototype 3-4 inside linebacker. But again, it's real close. I mean, both of those guys are right around the same size, and they both have a very similar style of play in terms of how they're able to fly around. I think turning on Devin White's tape, he has a very, very fun tape. I'd say it's like a lot of players, you kind of have to like sift through a lot of bad plays to get the good ones. Devin White has some amazing plays on tape. So I'm very high on him.
Yeah, I think that's the guy that I hope falls for them. And you've just heard the leadership stories with him too. And I think that obviously is a huge part about being a middle linebacker and a play caller as well. So there's a ton of amazing defensive prospects in this draft, especially at the top of it. But if you look at the Redskins, they need offensive talent terribly. Who is the playmaker on the outside? And I know like football teams are built from the inside out. That's fine, but they need dudes on the outside. If you're them and you're going, all right, we need to add a skill guy at 15, is there one that you hope is there that falls to you? Like, who's the guy, tight end, back, receiver?
Well, I think you start with DK Metcalf, and I know that opinions are very split on him, I think, coming into the draft. A lot of guys have him as their number one receiver. Some people are a little more concerned about his ability to bend and move. Obviously, his three cone times were very disappointing. It didn't really match up with, you know, his elite 40 time, and everyone was very excited about how fast he ran. But then when he kind of ran his agility things, that people got a little bit worried. And so that's definitely a concern. I like DK Metcalf a lot. He's my top rated receiver. He's just got that Josh Gordon upside and his ability to get deep, get behind the defense, really, really stress the defense. He's the type of player that I think defenses are going to have to account for on every play because he can go deep like that. He's so fast in his first few steps. The other guy who I really like that I think has kind of gained a little bit of momentum over the last couple of weeks is Akeem Butler out of Iowa State. He's more flexible, I think. He's the kind of guy who can play in the middle of the field as well. And he can do those, you know, hitch routes. He can come over the middle. He can run drags. He's actually, I think, capable of lining up in the slot and being that big slot receiver type guy. He's also, I think, down the line going to develop into a prototypical X that can get downfield. He had an incredible almost 22 yards per catch average in college or in the last season. And so that kind of tells you he's an incredible deep threat. He's got the ability to get deep. But he's also, I think, very good in kind of the short area too. And so he's maybe a little bit more well-rounded. I don't know if his ceiling is quite as high as DK Metcalf, but I like him a lot. I think he's going to be, a star in the league if he can get paired with the right offense, right quarterback. And so, he's going to probably need a guy that can throw with some anticipation. We'll see if Keenum can be that guy for him if he did end up there.
So how's Case Keenum for the right guy?
Yeah. that's, Yeah, that's questionable. I think Keenum obviously had a lot of production, with the Vikings, with those two elite receivers that they had. And so there's some hope there. But I think Butler is one of those guys, not going to ever separate a ton, but he's got such a huge catch radius that if he has a quarterback that trusts him, he's going to be very, very good. So to me, those are the two top guys. Obviously, you can throw in N'Keal Harry. He's a very big, he's more of a possession receiver. I think he'll be a very good player in the NFL. And then I guess sort of the wild card would be Marquise Brown out of Oklahoma. Excellent deep threat, very, very, very fast. But again, there's questions about his size. There's questions about his injury. He had a Lisfranc injury, and that could sap him of some of that speed that kind of defines his game. And so I think there's a little bit of risk there. And he might also be a little bit redundant with kind of what they wanted Paul Richardson to be, I think. I think Brown is probably faster than Richardson, but, it's kind of the same sort of style of player.
Yeah. Let me ask you this real quick, because the more I've covered the NFL, the more I've found this very important, and that is the mental aspect of this, from being able to handle what it takes to be a professional to being able to, obviously, on the field, make quick decisions and process the speed of the game. If you can do that, it can make up for a lack of athleticism, and if you can't, it doesn't matter how fast you run a 40, you can't play in this league. So as you're watching tape, without the chance as a media member to necessarily talk to these guys, obviously some guys you get a chance to at the combine, things like that, you might do interviews throughout the year. How do you try to evaluate their mental abilities? Because it is so essential to the evaluation.
The first thing that comes to my mind when you ask that question is kind of just instincts in general. I think, there's a lot of ways to define instincts for a football player. But to me, I think the easiest way to do it is basically just play recognition. Like how easily can a player decipher what's going on in front of him and kind of on the fly? Sort of like if you're a defensive player, you're reading the offense. If you're an offensive player, you're reading the defense. How quickly can you decipher what's going on in real time and react? And as you're asking that question, the first guy that came to my mind was Byron Murphy, the corner out of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
He's just, there's some questions about his athleticism, his long speed. He's not the most, he doesn't have track speed downfield like some of these other corners in this class. But to me, when you watch him play, the way that he moves around, the way that he, can kind of just look at the route combinations developing in front of him and make plays on that. He's just a very, very instinctive player. And so he can figure out what's going on in front of him and make the play. He can make up for a lack of elite athleticism. He's very quick, but he's not super fast, like in a straight line. So there's a few guys in this class, I think, that have that they're very, very instinctive of what's going on. And I have Byron Murphy as my top corner because of that, because of his ability to, just kind of decipher what's going on.
Yeah, I've definitely talked to a couple of scouts that feel the same about him, that he's just the competitiveness and the intellect, that he's the guy. So it's interesting to hear you say that as the example to point to there. Danny, this was good stuff, man. I'm sure we'll do this again before the draft. Always appreciate the time. You're not going to be in Phoenix, are you, for the owners' meetings?
No, I'm not.
Okay, so sadly I will not see you there, but we'll have to link up at some point somewhere down the road. Good to see you in Indy, and good to talk to you here on the phone.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on the show.
You got it, man. That's Danny Kelly of The Ringer. You can read his stuff at theringer.com. Follow him on Twitter at Danny B. Kelly. I'm Craig Hoffman here on 106.7 The Fan of 15 Minutes. Jeff Ehrman, Inside Maryland Sports. We will talk to him about what transpired today as the Terps season is over. What now for Mark Turgeon and the program? That's at 5:30. We got all the local teams hit. Emily Caron on Virginia coming up at 6. And Spiro Ditas called Virginia Tech last night. He'll call him again tomorrow as they have advanced into the round of 32. He's going to join us at 6:45. Talking some football and some hoops. It's a Saturday afternoon. Craig Hoffman with you on The Fan.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Greg Hoffman with you on 106.7 The Fan, thefandc.com, and the radio.com app. Ready for a Wizards update? An actual reason to watch the Wizards tonight. Trevor Ariza is out, so Troy Brown gets his second career start. Yeah, they're actually going to play the rookie in a lost season. Way to go, Scott Brooks. Woohoo! This concludes the Wizards update. So I'm off to Phoenix tomorrow for the NFL's owners meetings. I'm on a 7 a.m. out of DCA. Good times. Means I got to get my tail out of bed at about, 5:15. Get on the road, be parked by 5:45. No, I can probably, I got to be on the road by 5:30. Want to be there by about 6. Board at 6:30. My flight boards as I open the app of my airline. Boards at 6:26 a.m. I'm going to sleep on the plane. It's fine. But I had something terrible happen to me today, Vic. It's going to cause me literal pain as I get on this flight that is... How long is this flight?
Feel sorry for you.
You don't even know what you have to feel sorry for, but I appreciate your preemptive sorrow. As I was playing basketball, playing a little pickup before I came over here, and I had a knee-to-knee situation. Got a nice little bruise right above my knee. Do you know how stiff that thing's going to be when I get to Phoenix?
It's not going to be good. Are we talking like a 5-minute kneeing here if this was a game of hockey?
I mean, no, it was inadvertent. It was no, like, okay. We both went up. I went up for a layup. Guy went up to block the shot. I don't remember what happened on the play. I just remember, ow, my knee hurts. Or maybe I was on deep. I don't remember how we literally came together, but it was a knee-to-knee situation. And, like, right now, I'm sitting with my leg bent so because it feels better that way. But, like, even when I just got up in that commercial break to go to the kitchen, get a little snack, like, I'm limping, man. This does not feel good, and it's going to feel so terrible after a 4.5-hour flight.
Ouch. You should ask Bruce Allen, you know, what should I do about my knee here?
Why would Bruce Allen?
I'm just kidding.
Oh, because I get to ask Bruce Allen questions?
Yes.
But that'll be after. I'm going to limp into the interview. Be like, oh, what's wrong with your knee? Like, I'm not telling you. See your team's medical history? Ooh, low blow.
Yeah, we can help with that.
No, thanks. Good. Got my own medical staff. Go see my PT. She'll take care of me.
Did you ice it?
No. See, ice, overrated. Heat is the play. Keeps it loose. Ice can help reduce swelling, but I don't have like a swelling issue. I got like a soreness issue. But I also have another predicament. So it's a 4-hour, 20-minute flight, right? And I've got, on the airline that I fly, because I've now flown enough doing this job, I have status. So I have the upgrade requested, but as of now, has not been fulfilled. So right now, sitting in coach, which is fine. I'm going to have to pay for this one, too, because it's over a 500-mile flight. Under 500 miles on my airline of choice, I get an airline of choice is a relative term. And those that follow me on Twitter know it's a relative term because there's been a couple of rants against this particular airline. Under 500 miles, complimentary upgrade if it's available. Over, got to pay. It won't be that bad. It'll be worth it on this long of a flight. But haven't gotten it yet, but I can get the main cabin extra seats for free. So I can get some extra leg space for free. But do I take that first row, which has the 6 inches extra leg room? And I'm almost 6 feet tall. Like I got some leg length on a middle seat, or do I take a regular seat on the window?
That's a tough one. Do you like window seats more? Like, is there
I
any
do, But also, I mean, I'd rather have window than middle, but on this long of a flight, like, that means potentially if I got to get up, maybe to stretch my knee, that's two that I got, like, two people I got to get over as opposed to just one. And if it's in that first row, I can probably just walk around whoever's on the aisle. So right now I'm in that first row. I'm in, there's four, I guess, first class rows. I'm in row five.
And that's with the extra leg room.
6 inches extra leg room.
Yeah, I think that's where you have to go with because of your current status of your knee.
I think that cements it.
Like, you have no choice. Like, if you had no knee problem, I think you go window. But with your current state, you have no choice.
Vic, I appreciate you. Thanks for helping me solve my life's problems. Now let's see if we can solve the Terps' problems. Jeff Ehrman from Inside Maryland Sports joins us next here on 106.7 The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Greg Hoffman with you on 106.7 The Fan. Maryland loses to LSU 69-67 in the NCAA tournament. So let's talk about that. And now what? With Jeff Ehrman of Inside Maryland Sports. He's with us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Jeff, thanks for a little bit of time. I know it's been a busy day.
Hey, Craig, no problem.
So let's talk about the game first, and then we'll go from there to figure out where everybody goes from here. The first half, I was able to watch that. I wasn't able to watch as much the second half. But the first half, that just, it was not going Maryland's way at all. LSU was getting to the rim. They were able to drive and kick, get some outside shots. They were trying to, they basically had what they wanted. Meanwhile, Maryland couldn't get in any kind of rhythm offensively. What was it that you think was the biggest problem for them in the first half that they then were able to fix in the second half to get back into that game?
Well, I mean, it's hard to really just isolate this one game when you talk about that, because that's kind of been who they've been all season with the first half. I mean, not every game, but in many, the majority of games, I would say they've gotten off to slow starts, and just kind of who they are, who they've been at this point. But, you know, the 3-point shooting was the biggest thing. You know, they couldn't buy a three to save their lives in the first half. And that was a killer. And, you know, offensively, time after time, we've seen them come out and struggle like that. Didn't get Fernando going early. Cowan again, got off to another slow start, picked it up a little there. He did hit early three, but long story short, this is just a team that all year long has had these kind of slow starts. Nobody really knows why, and it's hard to consistently dig out of holes like that. They've done it many times, but eventually, you know, that's going to catch up to you.
Do you have a theory as to why?
No, I really don't. You know, some people will tell you that, you know, Turgeon is not in their face enough. He's not intense enough. Or, you know, some people might say it's because they're really young this year, you know, fourth youngest in the country. But, you know, it's hard to really pinpoint it. It's just, you know, as for fans, I'm sure it's infuriating at this point, especially a day like today, where if you don't fall in that hole, you win the game.
Jeff Ehrman, you can follow him on Twitter at Jeff_Ehrman, two N's. And Ehrman, of course, the site Maryland.247Sports.com. It's Inside Maryland Sports. He's with us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. You know, the Bruno Fernando part of this is super interesting to me, too. They could not get him going in the first half, and you would see him insert himself. He'd come up with a big rebound. He winds up with 15 on the game. You know, he was as forceful as he could be, it seemed, as a guy who relies on others to get him the ball. How much of that is something that you put on him trying to find different ways? How much of that is coaching? How much of that is on the guards simply not realizing that their best guy is him and they needed to get him more involved?
Well, LSU played really good defense on him. They're one of few teams that has the big guys who can wall him off. You know, not many have. John Teske from Michigan did a good job of that. Otherwise, there's not many who have. And occasionally, you know, they'd pinch down on him with the second guy. To me, he looks a little bit tentative, you know, a little robotic. I don't know what exactly mentally, you know, what the reason why was, but you know, there weren't a lot of good shots for him. He was, you know, to his credit, in what might be his final college game, he wasn't forcing things. He's been a willing passer all year long, but you know, I don't think you can really pin the loss on that. It was a tough matchup for him, and you know, the shots didn't fall, and they dug themselves that hole, and then you know, just a few key plays late in the game swung the tide.
Maryland winds up 9 of 28 from 3. Their three-point defense good, 7 of 24 for LSU, under 30%. Ultimately, what needed to change in the final stretch, or was it simply a matter, in your opinion, of they needed two more minutes on the clock for them to pull this out, outside of the obvious in the final possession?
Yeah, it feels like one of those classic games where if you had one more minute, you know, and that's an easy thing for someone to say, but it did feel like one of those classic games where if you had one more minute, you'd probably win the game. You know, there were a couple key misses. Ayala missed a big three, had a turnover a couple minutes earlier. He had hit a big three before that. And then the last play, you know, it's so rare to see a team get a layup basically at the buzzer in a half court set. So you want to say it was a huge defensive breakdown, but, you know, really there wasn't a lot they did. There was no glaring failure, I don't think, on that final play. I think, you know, Jalen Smith got caught with a tough mismatch on a really quick 5'10 guard who turned the corner on him. Ayala was hesitant to move in and help on him. He didn't want to leave the three-point shooter in the corner. And then Bruno got boxed, you know, walled off, so he couldn't quite get over in time. It was just perfect storm of events. And if you look to the video, as people are already, you know, it looks like it might have been a travel just to top it all off.
Jeff Herman of Inside Maryland Sports with me, Craig Hoffman, here on The Fan. All right, now let's get to the question that everybody's interested. What now? And let's start here, kind of, I guess, blending the two, the game and Mark Turgeon's future. What does the fight that this team showed show you about Turgeon as a coach, and how does that factor into the decision that Maryland has as a program to whether or not to move forward with him? Is he's certainly under a lot of pressure.
Yeah, I don't think they've ever stopped fighting for him, so I don't think that would be a reason why you closely evaluate his job performance. I mean, they've fought for him pretty much throughout. It's you know, it's more of a question of, do you think he's the guy long term to lead your program to the next level? And I don't know, you know, it's too early to say if they're really looking that closely at that, because he's got time and money all guaranteed left on his contract. So you know, just to speculate, if anything were to happen, I think the more likely scenario would be maybe if he were to find another job, maybe that I could see that. But Maryland, I don't think, you know, I don't think they're going to be buying him out anytime soon, especially not after a season where you went to the tournament and won a game with a really young team. So long story short, you know, the players do like him. So there's nothing, you know, I'm not really reading anything into the fact that they fought for him, but you know, did a good job coming back. He made a good call switching to the zone. The technical foul looked like a potential killer at the time, and they really turned things around from there. So, you know, for all the criticism he's received, I don't think you can point to too many things that he did wrong today.
It's interesting just talking to friends that are Maryland fans. Obviously, there's a ton of Maryland alums in the area. It's a thing that tends to happen if you have friends in this area. And it seems like there is a dislike for him, and that there's this mounting pressure for his job. So it's interesting to hear you say that. You know the program. Bluntly, like, I don't follow college hoops almost at all. My NFL duties take me to where college hoops has become a ridiculously small part of my life. So to pretend like I have a pulse on any of this would be lying to you and lying to the audience. So I think it's interesting to hear someone as informed as you say that. Why do you think that the difference in view from the program and the AD and the people that will ultimately make this decision seems to be so different from so many of the fans? And do you think the fan base as a whole is happy with Mark Turgeon?
Well, I don't know that the administration's view is necessarily different. I just think that they're in a position where even if you felt like you wanted to go in a different direction, which I'm not saying they do, even if you did, his contract and their financial situation, you know, obviously they just fired a football coach who they're paying off as well as paying their new football coach, Mike Locksley. And they were already in, you know, the program was already in financial distress before that. So It's more of a practicality thing. As far as the fans, I think the frustration is they want to get to the next level. You know, Maryland basketball fans are voracious. They consider themselves one of the best basketball schools in the country and one of the best, and they are one of the best fan bases when you look at attendance and home court advantage and things like that. So you've got a stretch now where you've been to one Sweet 16 since 2003. You know, that's a long time for a basketball school not to, to only have gone to one Sweet 16. So, you know, they want to get to the next level. They feel like he hasn't done that. And, you know, and some of it, I think, was lingering impatience from the latter Gary Williams years where he wasn't doing it either. So you have these fans who've waited year after year after year. The frustration is built up. And I think this year with this late season swoon they had was kind of the boiling over point up from all that frustration.
Do you think there's a chance, a legitimate chance, that Turgeon would take another job? There's obviously rumblings about Kansas that if something were to happen with this NCAA investigation and Self is no longer there, you know, it's his alma mater. But what are the chances that Turgeon leaves Maryland on his own? And then, let's start there, and then I have one more follow-up after that.
Well, it depends, first off, on what his discussions with the athletic director, Damon Evans, are. If that's a suggestion he receives, you know, that would make it more likely. And then if it would depend, I think, somewhat on how much all this heat from the fans and negativity is affecting him. I mean, he looks stressed out. I mean, he's only human. Anybody would be hearing it at this point when it's such overwhelming negativity from the fans. So, you know, how much is that affecting him? I know he and his family like being in the area, so is he willing to give that up to just kind of start fresh somewhere else? So without being inside of his head, it's really hard to say right now with the season just over what he'll do. But I think, you know, as things progress to the off season here soon, we'll start hearing more about any, you know, and we might hear nothing, but we'll have to wait and see.
And I hate to keep like pushing it, the like Turgeon's not their direction, but just again, hypothetically speaking, if it were to go that direction, what kind of coach do you think they would be looking for, attribute-wise, or if there's any specific names of guys that you think would be on their radar, feel free to throw those out there as well.
Yeah, it's hard to say any names because it's just so premature. But,
right. You
know, in that situation, your first hope is always that you can get a big splash guy, which was their hope last time with Sean Miller, and that didn't work out. They sniffed around a couple other guys, Jay Wright, you know, before he became the Jay Wright that he is now. You know, other guys like that, Jamie Dixon. So that would be your first inclination, I'm sure. And then you have, you know, the hot younger guys. Chris Beard right now is probably the hottest name in the country, I would think. You know, a guy like Nate Oates at Buffalo is a very hot name now, especially if he manages to pull off another win in this tournament. You know, those would be some guys. It's hard to think of any guys similar to Sean Miller at that point back 8 years ago who would be an obvious guy you'd target. You know, he had at the time told a lot of people that Maryland was his supposed dream job and things like that. So there's no guy specifically like that right now. But again, it's hard to really name any individual names with nothing having happened.
Gotcha. Jeff, I'm sure if something happens, you'll be on it. Appreciate your time. And I'm sure you will be heard on this radio station quite a bit over the next week or so. Good job this season. And we'll talk down the road.
Sounds good, brother. Thanks for having me.
That is Jeff Ehrman of Inside Maryland Sports on Twitter, @Jeff_Ehrman, ERMANN. Zion Williamson just had an interesting quote. Let's get to that before we talk a little Virginia hoops at the top of the hour here on The Fan.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I just saw the most amazing video I've ever seen in my entire life. Wow. My buddy Mike Leslie, who works down in Dallas for WFAA TV, just posted this video of the tweet says Father of the Year. And it's like snow on a snow hill, two little kids running up, dad behind them, as someone starts sledding down, and it's about to be a bad collision. And this video is in slow motion at the literal last second. Dad somehow picks up kid one, picks up kid two, and jumps over the sled incoming. Unbelievable. I'm retweeting this at Craig Hoffman if you would like to see that. I am Craig Hoffman here on 106.7 The Fan. We are talking Virginia hoops. What is it about them that they've gotten down 2 years in a row to 16 seats? And why was yesterday different than a year ago? We'll talk to Emily Caron from Sports Illustrated about that at the top of the hour. We'll get to the Zion quote that I just saw in just a second. But first, we said we'd play this, and I don't want to disappoint. Mark Turgeon, if nothing else, good dude. I haven't watched enough Maryland hoops to be like, good coach, bad coach. I know a lot of people have a lot of opinions. I'm certainly willing to take a call or two if you want here, 800-636-1067, if you'd like to get out your thoughts. I won't have a lot to say in return. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. But this, you know, one of the things that I judge college coaches by, and we just talked with Jeff about this, is like, do you really care about these kids? Like, do you take a seriously the role that you are in charge of their lives, basically, in incredibly formative years? And caring and showing emotion is important. In that role, doesn't always help you win basketball games. It certainly doesn't hurt. But after the loss today, Mark Turgeon had that part down.
Did I love him? I love coaching them. They made coaching fun again. I was proud of them. And they represented our school all year the right way. And they're all great kids. And I don't know why it didn't go our way today, but they deserve better, and they can hold their heads high.
That's tough. Because I think it's really easy sometimes as fans, and it could be really easy as coaches, to just go, oh, we'll get them next year. But when a season ends in college and pro sports, the same. That group's never getting together again. And it's something that's not lost on me on, say, locker cleanout day when I'm covering the Redskins. That's the last time that group is going to be together. And we just look at who's already moved on. You know, when I talk to Jamison Crowder, like, when I go back into that locker room, he ain't going to be there. And there are guys on that team that means a lot to, that Jamison was their really good friend. For me, it was a guy I liked talking to, liked to interview. You know, it's not like we were boys, not hanging out. Preston Smith, one of the most popular guys in that Redskins locker room. Not going back into that Redskins locker room. And so think about your friends from college and what it was like at graduation when you're like, damn, we're not going to all be together like this again. and multiply that times your favorite team you ever played on from a sporting sense. That's what you got. And I think Turgeon, like, for Turgeon not to just go, man, this stinks, but, like, we're going to come back strong next year, realizing that, you know, and acknowledging how special it is to have a group to go through everything that you go through throughout a season, like, that's real, and I appreciate that realness, so to speak, from Mark Turgeon. As for the Zion Williamson thing, so he was asked, is it fair that CBS gets to follow him around with Zion Cam while he doesn't benefit at all from his likeness being used to make money? And his response was mature. My mom told me that I need to worry about the things that I can control. And I have a ton of respect for Zion for saying that. Not because I think that CBS should be able to do this and Zion not get any likeness or anything like that. Because ultimately, like, they could do this with an NBA guy. Obviously not CBS, but ESPN could do this with an NBA guy. They could follow LeBron around for a day or Giannis around for a day. And Giannis is not getting paid for that. It's journalism. Some twisted form of it. Sports journalism, let's call it. And so following Zion around and, like, having him do a tournament diary, yes. I don't think he should get paid extra for that. Because that's just not how that works. But should he be getting a piece of the CBS billion and Turner billion dollar contract that allows them to have the rights to the tournament in the first place? Oh, hell yeah. And especially when, like, I mean, watching Duke UNC in the ACC tournament for ESPN's sake, every single time they went to break, it was like the Zion graphic and a Zion dunk. Zion, Zion, Zion. How much Zion can we possibly squeeze in? The kid's a star. And he's earned it because he's awesome. And there's a million different financial arguments about, you know, oh, well, if they paid the football and the basketball players, they couldn't fund the women's lacrosse program or even the men's lacrosse program or the whatever. And, like, sure, there's some validity to that, but you can't tell me that when they've got multiple multi-billion dollar contracts, that there ain't a little bit of Skrilla to go around in the sports where these guys are playing those sports. So college football, college basketball. You cannot convince me that every program is bleeding money or is just doing enough, and even that most programs are just doing enough to be able to cover the expenses and then the rest of the athletes that they're able to support based off the money made in those sports. And if you are doing that, then your accountants are terrible. Because that's so much money. Figure it out. But what makes it worse is you can't even, like, because of quote-unquote amateurism, you can't even do the likeness thing. Like, they can't go get an endorsement deal. Not saying it'd be easy, but I think it's, like, easiest sports take ever. Let's figure that one out. University of Virginia. They got scared, but they ultimately won. We'll talk about them next with Emily Caron of SI.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.